Blog Talk Blah. Radio.
Oh, but blew your ears out. Go ahead, guys. Marty, how you doing? Brian, nice to see you. I just watched your tape. Goodbye. Scott,
Hello?
That means talk. Scott.
Yo.
Chat.
Yes, sir.
Good.
Hi. Lord. Hi, fellas. Hi. How you guys doing?
Hello, Donna, Scott, and Marty.
And Don.
Hi, Brian. Yeah. And Marty's out here, too?
I'm here, JJ.
You want me to draw you a map?
There you go.
Come on. I've 14 years doing this. Just get with it, okay? Come on.
Okay. Get the crayons and the paper out for me, will you? Anyway. Hey, fellas, has anybody heard anything about what's going on with Aviva?
No.
Marty,
as far as what?
You heard anything about
what do you mean?
Oh, I think funding. From what I understand, I'm not sure. I haven't confirmed this. Somebody said that the retirees, the $2 or the $4 that they pay a month into their membership as retirees, is being rolled over right into the VEBA. And I can't confirm that. So until I do, it's speculating. That's where I'm at with that one. So if you guys heard anything, let me know.
Oh, I'm not a fan.
Wouldn't surprise you.
Do the LM2 reports, would that show that on there?
Well, that's just it. You have to be able to find the VEBA. And to find the VEBA, it's not that easy to find that information. It's in there. I had worked with Teresa Dodds one time, and it took us like 4 hours of digging inside the Treasury Department to get to that information, or the IRS, to get to that information. That's when we found out that the regional directors and the vice presidents were all getting a slice of the pie, so to say, from the VEBA for being honorary trustees of the VEBA. And people don't know, well, the president gets almost $30,000 and the regional directors get almost $28,000 apiece. And the vice presidents get just over $29,000. They don't get as much as the president. But that is recorded. As far as how the funds are divvied up, I really don't know. As far as LM2s, I have to go try to dig and see if I can find them again. You know?
Yeah, I'm not sure. This is the first time I've heard about it.
Well, that VEBA information is very well buried for like yourself or Marty or I to try to find that. It's well buried. You know, we figured out with Treat's help, we figured out at that time who the five people were who were the trustees and the administrator of the trust, the VEBA trust at that time.
I don't know what,
and that's the,
I don't know why the leadership does not put that in the Solidarity House magazine.
I don't know.
I think it's something the membership has a right to know. I mean, it should be in the magazine that we're supposed to get once a month.
You'd think that information would be there so the retirees could see it. So the ones that, you know, wanted to have some information about it. That's a good idea, Brian, but I don't think they'll do it because they don't want us to know.
Well, it's
no different than them
skimming off the money to build a cottage for Dennis Williams, right?
Yeah.
How many delegates knew about that?
That's
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, Marty.
So my
Marty
thing is
there.
Who voted for this? Because I don't remember it ever being brought up. So was it the executive board that voted on this and not the delegates?
Well, I don't know. Marty was You were there, right?
I didn't make it. No, I wasn't there.
I thought you were the Constitution.
I was intimately had the delegates here at our local meeting all groomed, and they never heard anything at all on business, had anything to do with any kind of building or cabin or cottage for this president. Nowhere.
Right.
You'll hear that
once in a while. You'll
hear that noise once in a while. It's nothing. It's DMs. If it pertains to the show, I'll let you know. So
I thought it had something to do with us being 30,000 feet in the air, and we had to buckle our seatbelts.
I was really listening to this guy right here. And
you start backing out of union dues, and they start going through the assets. We have nothing. We have nothing to fight these companies with. That, to me, is common sense.
That
sound familiar.
Yeah, he sounded pretty angry. You sounded pretty angry. Who was that?
I've never seen him when he wasn't angry.
Hey.
Good.
Speaking of angry and a good laugh, I got a good laugh initially, and then I got very angry. You know, you brought up the cabin, and that's a good point. But the icing on the cake and the cherry on top of the icing is that Dennis Williams decided not to use laborized union workers or United Labor Workers to build a house. He got non-union constructors to build the house. How do you like that?
Well, I know you're
his colors.
Well, I mean, there's no surprise there. I mean, it's not like they support the union membership anyway, so what makes you think that they would hire union skilled trades to build that cottage up there?
Right. Right.
That is exactly right.
The union labor contractors, they had bidded. There was three bids, and I had to try to find the article. Was about $40,000 more. They had one bid that was
one bid was for $1.3 million, and the non-skilled the non-union came in at $280,000.
Jeez,
that's a big difference.
No, $820,000. There wasn't a bid that was under $750,000. I think somebody might have got that number wrong. That was who he settled for was $800,000. But if you read into the article, it also includes a couple of pontoon boats, another boat of some kind. There's some other things that are all included in that. And that's like another $180,000 itself.
Jeez.
Wow.
So, hey, you know, going to go out and retire? And go ahead.
Is the trend going to be that every president that leaves the UAW going to get the same deal?
Yeah. Good question. Good.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And who called it, by the way? Who in the hell called that a cabin?
Yeah.
I live in a cabin.
It's a house. Now, who was the first one that they did build a cabin for? And it was a cabin. It was like a one bedroom. It wasn't a big cabin at all. It wasn't Woodcock. Who was before Woodcock, after Ruther? I mean, it was after Woodcock. I can't remember. One of them had a small cabin. And then when he passed away, they turned that into living quarters up there at Black Lake. or a museum. Museum, I think. They did something with it.
I don't know.
So now we know that previous shows in the past that Jokic had planned on building a house up there at Black Lake on the property, and his intentions was to run the UAW from Black Lake. You know, he was retired. So
It's probably Williams has had. It's just one of, you know, Gary Jones is just an appendage from Williams. Dennis Williams to know how to do what he's doing.
Well, maybe he thought he did. You know, I mean, in light of all the indictments that are going on, Norwood Jewell made the front page again. His mugshot got, well, not a mugshot, but his picture got posted on a few pages this last week.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, they haven't got to Jones yet. They're evidently investigating him because 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, they talked about the timing of the story breaking out with the Palm Springs in the hotel. That was like $1.2 million, and we find out that some of them people were there for not just weeks, but months, and we paid for that. At a very prestigious golf course, and had a hotel there, and they were renting the condos on some of the back holes and stuff. Yeah. I mean, Brian can tell you how they wine and dine at the convention. I can only imagine what they did.
It's no different than when Nate retired. When they threw that retirement party out in Vegas for him, you know, I mean, they had ice sculptures, they had lobster and shrimp and steak and all the free alcohol. I mean, it was a black tie event, and they had bands. I wouldn't be surprised if they damn near paid close to $1 million to have that event. It was management and union members.
Jeez.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was for Williams that's going out, right?
No, that was for Nate.
For Nate?
Nate Sr. that overseen, he was the VP over Chrysler before General Holyfield.
Oh, okay.
That was for him. Wow.
Well, it seems... when it comes to them, money's not an object. But, you know, as far as us getting cost of living or getting a meaningful wage in our agreement for every year instead of bonuses and whatnot.
Well, I'm still trying to figure out how they spend $400 million on trying to unionize the South on bus rides and hotels.
$400
million? Yep.
Out of the strike fund.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're right. Because when they recorded the previous, this goes back a couple, 3 years, when they recorded the financial statements of the union, it's always a year later. So on the end of 1 year, on December, when we found out what the balance was to the previous year on that next January, that next year we come out there, the strike fund was almost at $1 billion. And then that following year, when they reported again, it was just over $600
million.
Yep. Or, yeah, just about I think it was $600 million. Like Brian said, over $400 million disappeared in a year. Where did that go? Nobody still has an answer, do they?
No, so between the $400 million, the $1 million in Palm Springs, cottage for Dennis Williams, and the retirement party for Nate, I mean, that's just that's just what we see right now. You can imagine how much more money is probably been wasted on numerous things that we don't know about.
Brian, you just named funds that were coming from union dues. All the stuff that we heard from NTC, that's a different set of funds. So, I mean, it doesn't matter to them. It's money to them. It's for them. It's never for us.
Well, even the funds from NTC, even though they came from General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler, the fact is those funds were allotted to our international staff to basically bribe them to get them to give concessions.
That's exactly right.
So with all that we just mentioned in the last 5 minutes, you think that would be enough to unify the membership and get them to stand up against all this corruption, this collusion, and all the nepotism of hiring families and friends that know nothing about labor, know nothing about negotiating in a global economy, and we're taking constant concessions, they're outsourcing jobs, and nobody's doing anything about it. Nobody wants to take a stand. And I just don't get it. I'm dumbfounded on why the membership is so afraid of the leadership. You don't work for the leadership. You don't work for the Solidarity House. You work for the Big Three. You pay the union. You pay the Solidarity House union dues to represent you. They're technically not your leaders. Everybody calls them leadership, but they're your representatives under the National Labor Relations Board. They're not your leaders.
Yeah, they're
your representatives, and they're not representing you.
Right. Right.
No, they haven't for a while.
No.
Now we're coming around the corner to contract time, and they're talking about resolutions. Everybody's got a different date when the resolutions are supposed to be turned in, and they're asking people to submit the resolutions with non-economic proposals, meaning they don't plan on negotiating any economic increases, as far as I'm concerned, when they put that in their letterheads.
Now you want to repeat that again? Did I hear you right?
Yeah.
That's correct. They said,
say it again, bro.
When you submit your resolutions in writing, you are not to send any – You're not to put any non-economic proposals to the Solidarity House.
So you're saying that I can't ask that you negotiate our COLA back, a raise for the retirees?
According to this, according to the letterheads, yes. Can't do it.
Now, who got that letterhead?
Well, 1248 has it on their board. Local 7, which I just shared that letter a few days ago, it was on theirs as well. It stated no non-economic proposals.
I submitted a few. One of them was cost of living. One was a increase in retirees' pay, their benefits. Had another one that was put in for a living wage agreement again, which that'd be, what happens to all these? When your locals all get together, they accumulate all these recommendations.
Man.
They bring them all together. And, of course, these people are going to get paid lost time and be off the floor because they're going to take a bunch of people to go through all these. And then if they don't like the resolution, they just put it in a circular file. And they, from what I understand, then they handpick the ones they want, and they take them down to Detroit. And then they go through those and do the same process again. And if they don't like them, or like Brian's saying, if they have anything to do with economics involved in the resolution, they're going to put it in the garbage can. So, what? I guess my point is, outside of wages and benefits, Why are we here? Isn't that the only reason we work? It don't make sense.
Well, I mean, you guys got your resolutions, your sheets, right? You already got them, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you look at your union board and you've seen the letterhead from your region, it states that you cannot submit any you cannot send any economic proposals in your resolutions. So when you go to work tonight, look at your union board and you'll see it in the letter.
I will go in early just to see if I can find it, because I didn't see that, and if I did, I'll let you know personally. I just can't get my head around that. I mean, what else is there? It's wages and benefits. That's why we work. We don't work here to help Mary Barra out or Marcioni, rest his soul, you know?
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, everything is economic to us.
Absolutely, has been. Prior to this last contract, it had been 13 years before we had a meaningful raise. And what did we get? A buck and some change an hour? For 13 years, that's what you get? Didn't get your cost of living back? Got more tiers added into your contract?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, two-tier, we're supposed to do non-core jobs, and now they're doing core jobs. Temps were supposed to do non-core jobs, and they're doing core jobs. I mean, everything that the union has stated has been nothing but a lie.
Right. Oh, and speaking of temps, there is, I'm sure Marty heard, well, Brian, I most of you guys have heard about what happened this last week when they put up results for the third quarter for General Motors. They turned around and they also announced that they wanted 18,000 of management, the salary folks, to take a buyout. And if you don't take the buyout, you're going to be put on an indefinite layoff. Now, coupled with that, I found out this last week that General Motors has started hiring temporary supervisors, and they're not allowed to put past 32 hours in a week.
Oh, God.
You guys,
well, you know what? We sit here and laugh because we sit there and say, well, management kind of put themselves in that position, but you know it's going to have a huge effect on the economy.
Oh, yeah. All of us can see what's going to happen going on down the road. I mean, we look at what happened to our side of the house. Don't think that's not going to happen to your side of the house. Am I right in that thinking?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, they already got their pensions froze, and then now they got to pay for their own health insurance. So they should have known this was coming, you know. So now they're laying off 18,000 people at General Motors. I know Ford was talking about laying off a lot of salary workers as well. I don't know if they're going to bring in temp supervisors like General Motors is going to do. But either way, I mean, loss of jobs is not good for the economy.
No, it isn't. Right.
And so now we got to
figure out when they come out with autonomous cars, how many robotics are going to bring in and how many more job losses we're going to have.
Good point. See how many of those vehicles the robots purchase, right? I snagged something. I posted on Workers Workplace Genius, but I did snag it from the co-workers Facebook site. There was, I don't know if it was Defiance or Kansas City was talking about this. And he said, anyone who is looking to go to Flint Truck, now is the time to put your transfer in. And what they did was they got a copy of our local, our chairman does a thing on Facebook called the 598 Plain Truth. And what it is, and I'll read this to you. There have been multiple questions surrounding the manpower requirements. Here is what we know. It is currently considered a request and has not been approved. We expect approval soon, which it will initiate the NEPC, and they will go through a very long process of filing it. Currently, we are requesting 850 more people. The plan is to onboard people beginning January 7th and about 50 a week. This is all the subject to approval, so details can change, and we won't know the makeup of the group for some time. So they're saying our local, they've asked for 850 more people.
Wow.
My question is, how many of those 850 people are going to be seniority workers? What do you guys think?
I don't think
you're going to take anybody. What do you think, Brian?
I'm sorry. I had to put you on mute because I was talking to my daughter.
Oh.
I would think that there'd be a whole lot of...
Hold on, Scott. Marty's got something to say. Go ahead, Marty.
I would guess that she'd probably get some Lordstown and Orin. People would want to go to Flint.
We've already got people from Orin. Now we're starting to get their management folks. And Orin had some of their Saturdays canceled.
I thought she was talking about how they was going to be able to get the manpower at Flint.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Transfer.
I was just saying.
Why couldn't they transfer?
How many people do they got on layoff with General Motors right now?
That's my point. If you got people laid off at Lordstown and Lake Orion, then they have to. They'd get first pick to go to Flint.
We've got a large number of people from Lake Orion already.
Yeah.
In the last 2-3 months. So,
I'm on the order of 800 people, though, right?
No, not 800 people. I don't know if there's that many people at Lake Orion that
would like
to come to the truck plant. Huh?
That's as many as is on the first shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how many people were at Lake Orion and Lordstown in materials? A couple hundred, maybe?
I'd say at least.
At least that many at Lordstown, because Lordstown at that time was a 3-shift operation. That was stamping and assembly combined. So there's probably at least that many people, if not more. And then at Lake Orion, the operation, they have a lot of robotics. And Lake Orion had already did away with most of their material people anyway, because they got they had subcontracted out to Oakland Press, and I think there's like 5 different people in house and suppliers unload a lot of their own materials now.
If you guys remember last year, they were coming after Toledo Transportation. So, I could see them, this contract, coming after Toledo Transportation again. And that might just spread out through the big three, where they get rid of all transportation and outsource that as well. That's more jobs gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you said transportation. What do you mean?
The truck haulers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'd already lost those well before Don left. They had cans.
Yeah, Complete Auto.
Chrysler still has theirs, so Chrysler's probably going to be in the mix of outsourcing theirs in 2019.
Right.
Sadly.
Especially not real hard.
BP.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is, our union brothers and sisters are putting in referrals to their family members or to their friends to get them hired into GM, Ford, or Chrysler as temps, And as you know, most of these people have been tenants for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and they're being abused. Why would you submit a referral to get a friend or family member in, knowing that they're going to be abused once they get in there? There's no chances of them actually being flipped over to full time, you know, because they're not really hiring anybody. They're using nothing but temps now. They don't want to hire these people.
Yeah, I think a lot more right. of my friends and family.
You know, and I believe, you know, somebody posted a little bit earlier that I seen. I can't find the thing on my page, but, you know, their relative ended up committing suicide. That's the second person that's committed suicide being a temp, being the way that they're treated. Because the other guy was what, at Ford's? Remember that during the summer he went to the local and they had some type of thing going on and he ended up killing himself?
I did hear about it.
Working two places?
I'm sorry.
One was working at two different places, right?
Yeah. He was working for GM and Ford.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
As a temp.
Now you bring that up, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Bad enough.
I mean, these people don't know if they're coming and going, man. You can't live a life like that not knowing if you're secure or not.
No.
This is true. This is true.
Jeez. That's terrible.
You know, you talked about this poor fellow being a temp and working two full-time jobs, one at Ford and one at Chrysler, you said, right?
Yes. No, GM and Ford.
GM, he's working, you know, back and forth between the two plants and stuff. And if I remember right, Marty, you might be able to help me out. Brian, you might be able to help me out. But I was pretty sure somewhere in the Constitution, it said something about a union brother or a union sister not working in another unionized shop, because that would take work away from possibly another member of the union.
Hmm. Well, I don't know if that's now, but it was back then, back years ago.
Right.
I don't know about now.
Okay.
And not just that, he's not hired in full time. He was just a temp, so I don't know if that would apply to him.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
true.
He's paying dues.
Well, they're paying dues, but it doesn't mean that they have the rights of the same rights that we have.
No.
You know, and he talked about Ford, the Free Press. A couple of weeks ago, put that story out about the secret meeting with then President Williams and his executive administrative assistant Chuck Browning, and they met for a private lunch near the Detroit airport, and they got the Ranger back. You heard about that, right?
I did.
Yeah. I'd like to know what happened at the private lunch. Four brothers and sisters. It won't bode well for you. That's the phrase. It won't bode well for you. If Williams is involved and they made a deal to bring something back, that usually means you're going to lose somewhere else, right?
It's a possibility.
I think it's a strong possibility, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Well, and like I said, Norwood's picture's been posted around a few times this last week. And now I would like to know what they found on his computer at home, because now evidently the story he told everybody about that gun being a gift, we find out now wasn't really a gift at all, was it?
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Shotgun?
Yeah.
I remember the shotgun incident, but when did you find out that it wasn't a gift?
Put the story out.
It still says it's a gift, Scott.
He
2015, before his birthday.
Yeah,
it's still, unless I'm missing something.
Right.
I could have read it. I don't know.
I'm looking at the MLive article real quick, and it said that Detroit News has reported that training funds were used to purchase a $2,180 shotgun given to Jewel as a birthday present in 2015 and for a party in his honor, an event that the newspaper reported included ultra-premium liquor, more than $7,000 worth of cigars, and more than $3,000 worth of wine with custom labels.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get a hold of, I believe the fellow's name, the lawyer for Jewel, his name is Joe Duffy, and he's in a Chicago-based attorney. And he's been, he said, this guy's been named. He's not been directly named by federal prosecutors or charged with a crime yet. So I had read one of the other Detroit articles, and they were talking about Norwood Jewel. And I think that he had something come up about that he had asked for the gunner. There's something that's tied. There's more coming out about the shotgun. I'll find out about it. I'll post. I'll find it when I'm looking for it. I'll put that out there. But
who owns the Renaissance Center in downtown Detroit?
I believe it's General Motors.
Okay. So at the last convention, when all the delegates got set up in a hotel there at the Renaissance Center, who paid for it? Was it a freebie on General Motors' part?
No.
No. I don't believe that.
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of conflict of interest that you would set your delegates up there at the General Motors headquarters, the hotel there. You know, I mean, I think it's a conflict of interest.
Do they own the Renaissance Center, or do they lease? Because I think
they own it.
It's been such a long time ago. If I'm trying to remember, did not the Renaissance Center go bankrupt? Did they file bankruptcy and then I think General Motors said that they were going to buy that and turn that into world headquarters, and then they were going to lease. I mean, that's what it was. They were going to lease office space out to other people. And other businesses, right? That worked out? Anybody?
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't even know what you said.
I believe that the Renaissance Center, I was there a long time ago back in the 80s and went up to the summit. Remember the restaurant, the bar at the top that rotated around? I was there a long time ago. But if I remember right, and I'm pretty sure that's how it went, whoever owned the Renaissance Center filed for bankruptcy. And I believe General Motors purchased the building with the intent of keeping majority of the building for themselves, world headquarters, and then leasing out the rest of the building and office spaces and the floors and stuff for other businesses. So they would be making money on their purchase. Plus, putting a little headquarters there.
So you think they're leasing out the hotel part of it to Marriott?
Good question. Don't know. Is that who is inside the Renaissance Center? Is the Marriott?
Yes.
Well, I'd have to go back to back and find out the subsidiaries that are owned by General Motors. It's prior to the bankruptcy. Ford, Chrysler, General Motors, they each had a ton of subsidiaries that weren't just automotive related. So
I just think it was funny that the delegates stayed there at the General Motors headquarters there at the Marriott, you know.
Right, right. I'm sure there was a reduced rate offered to the union. In fact, I'm almost positive there was a reduced rate offered to the UAW.
Either way, it's still a,
it's
still a conflict of interest.
I would think so. I mean, I think all of us on this show would think that'd be a conflict of interest.
I mean, that was the purpose of NTC funds, right?
I think so.
The kind of funnel money, the help, the Solidarity House, because they were running a deficit at that point in time. So they were using NTC funds to keep from spending.
Funds.
I don't know.
You know,
I don't know.
We have callers in the switchboard, and since Scott's not going to tell you, I'll tell you, push one on your keypad if you'd like to join the conversation.
Yeah, we have about 17 minutes left in the show. You know, down farther in the MY article, there did make a point that I'll bring into King, who was the assistant to Norm Jewell, said that she was regularly asked by superiors, including Norwood Jewell and Mr. Jewell's administrative assistant, to make improper purchases that personally benefited them and which totaled at least another $25,000 to $30,000. So, there you go, fellas. I mean, there's so much stuff going on.
This is what's got me baffled. The paper reported that Bob King knew about this and told them to stop. Am I correct?
That is correct.
So if Bob King knew about it, then Dennis Williams knew about it. And so how come Bob King or Dennis Williams did not file any type of charges with the executive board and have them removed?
Good question.
If it's just a few bad apples, I mean, right? If it's just a few bad apples, why didn't Bob King or Dennis Williams file any type of charges against these individuals?
I think, Brian, the allegation is that Dennis Williams had also directed them to use these funds too.
Well, that's correct. From what the paper said, he did.
Then that would probably be the reason why, you know, he wouldn't be able to charge them, is because he would get charged himself.
Well, then that, my point is, it's not just a few bad apples, it's the entire Solidarity House. And my thing is, the executive board, which is part of it, the Solidarity House, I mean, if they're all corrupt, are they going to investigate themselves?
They'd love that, yeah.
No, and we know how that works out. You know, it's, you're right. King knew about it, and of course, Dennis Williams knew about it, because at that time, he was the financial secretary of the UAW. And if anybody knows what's going on as far as money, it's going to be the financial secretary.
Yeah.
He was full aware of that.
So by wasting $400 million of the strike fund to unionize the South on bus rides and hotels, another $1 million in Palm Springs, California, and all the concessions, the increase in union dues, just to turn around and tell us we can't strike because we don't want to lose market share because the Solidarity House was sitting on GM and Chrysler stock and sitting on the VEBA. Then they turn around and build a cottage for Dennis Williams using our funds, build it on Black Lake, using non-union workers. That's a slap in the face. And ain't nobody standing. Nobody is standing against this corruption, the collusion, nor the nepotism. You got General Holyfield's kids down there. You got Norwood Jewell's kids down there. They're all
gamble.
Getting paid over $100,000 for doing what?
They got the pedigree.
Or organizing.
What's that, Marty?
Where's the membership at? Where's the membership at? I want to know why the membership is not engaging and standing up.
Wow.
Good question.
You know, because, and I'm not going to call people out, but there's a lot of people on these union pages that had jobs at the Solidarity House or had a job at the region, or they were elected officials, or they were appointed positions or had appointed positions. And all these people are sitting there putting their advice on these union pages, telling us what we should be doing. Oh, we got to get control of our local leadership and all this other crap, right? So my thing is if you truly believe in what you're spewing on these union pages, how come ain't none of these so-called leaders or these people that had these positions doing it themselves? Why ain't they implementing what they're telling us to do? Because right. They know it don't work. Because the bottom line is, at the end of the day, the Solidarity House still controls everything. They still negotiate the international contract. Therefore, they can tell you local, you're either going to fall in line or we'll send this product line to a different local.
Yeah,
so
Brian,
even if
let me get John on. I think this is John. Hang on.
All right.
I'm trying to – John, you're on with – go ahead, Brian.
So even if you get control of your local – nothing's stopping the Solidarity House from threatening them, saying either you're going to do this or you're going to push this contract and sell it to your membership, or we'll just pull your damn product line out of there and shut you people down. So the bottom line, the change has to happen at the Solidarity House, not on the local level. And two, if the UAW is violating the Constitution and they're not following within the rules that they designed for themselves, why are we following the rules? Why are we sitting there filing appeals and complaints and all this other crap, and you can't even get a local agreement or your grievances answered? Why ain't we in front of the Solidarity House right now going through those gates? Because if you really think by following the Constitution is going to make change, or you getting involved in the union is going to make that change, or you get control of that local is going to make that change, it's not. Because at the end of the day, the Solidarity House, they negotiate the international contract. They're the ones that sit there and tell you, we'll pull the product line out of your plant if you don't follow the orders that we tell you. You've seen how the UAW Constitutional Convention went down. Majority of the delegates voted that 31% salary increase. And then they turned around and they voted for Gary Jones and his caucus, which happens to be Cindy Estrada's on there, and she's part of this investigation. She's part of the she's one of the individuals that helped outsource materials with Lordstown and Lake Orion.
Yep.
So the delegates supported these crooks and supported a wage increase. So, and they were all supposedly following protocol. This is the way the Constitution, this is the way the convention was set up. And how did that work out for us?
Not very well.
No, and then to turn around and Dennis Williams get a nice, beautiful cottage with quartz countertops and three bathrooms put in, right?
Right.
But right. we want to keep talking in circles about what we should be doing when we should just be doing it. And the only way we're going to do it is through the Solidarity House gates. And I've been saying that for many, many years on this show.
Yes, yeah.
And nobody's getting it yet.
We got to have the numbers to do it.
Well, yeah, you do got to have the numbers. But this is the thing. People on alternative work schedules, you got ABC crews. Meaning ABC crews, with or without your local leadership, you need to start organizing and leading and get your asses out in front of that Solidarity House 3 hours before your shift or 3 hours after your shift and start putting pressure on the Solidarity House round the clock. You got three shifts, ABC. Get down there, start putting pressure on them. Because you're waiting for one person to do it or two people to do it, it ain't going to happen. It's going to take all of us to organize, all of us to lead. So you need to get out in front of the Solidarity House. And if you're out of state, you need to get out in front of your regions and put pressure on them. You need to put pressure on the entire upper structure of this union. It's the only way it's going to happen.
There you go.
I agree with you, Brian. But it's not going to happen overnight. We need to build and educate, and we need to get these people mad like we already are because we've looked into it. There's still a lot of people that don't know what's going on. They don't understand that the international, like just like you said, has absolute total control of the locals, and whatever the international says, the locals have to fall in line.
And but this is the thing. We don't have that.
They're no longer a part of the UAW because the international, when they were part of the UAW, told them, we're not going to support your strike anymore.
Look, right, this is the bottom.
This is
the thing. We don't have this kind of time. They're outsourcing materials. They outsource housekeeping. They outsource house corporate security. You've seen what they did to Detroit American Axle, St. Louis Minivan. They're going after transportation. I mean, we went from 1.5 million auto workers down to 150,000 auto workers. We don't have no more time. They're either going to engage and start fighting now, or come 2019, we ain't going to have nothing left to fight for. The bottom line is, you guys have a right to your concerted protected activity under the National Labor Relations Act. You also have your the U.S. Constitution, your right to protest, and your right to free speech. So, meaning you need to start getting out there and doing this now, because if you wait too long, there's nothing going to be left. They're going to eat this union from within. You guys elected your delegates, and your delegates went down there and supported a bunch of white collars workers to run this union, and they're eating this union from the inside out. So the time is now. You guys need to get down and start organizing.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to make everybody quiet.
No.
I missed that.
Oh, we're listening.
Well, I'm working on my plant and the people that I am in contact with on a daily basis, but that fear is hard to overcome.
Well, let me say this. All those people and materials, housekeeping, security, St. Louis Minivan, all these people that lost their jobs, imagine the fear they had when they didn't think they were going to get picked up. Imagine the fear that you have if you don't believe that you're going to get your job back, and then you don't have the money or the resources to fight, or the money to put food on the table so you can feed your kids. That, to me, is more fear. I fear not feeding my kids more than I do standing up to the Solidarity House. Because you don't work for the Solidarity House. They're your representatives, meaning you pay them to represent you, and they're not. So you have that right because it's your concerted protected activity to stand up to your union and better your union. So I don't know what I don't know what people are scared of. I mean, are you really scared of a certified public accountant? What you going to do, throw a pencil at you? I'm being real. You ever seen Gary Jones in person? You ever seen Dennis Williams in person?
No.
I mean, come on. It's not like they're physically fit.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you're right about that.
So, I mean, what are we scared of? They're representatives. They're supposed to be representatives. The union was not founded to be a contract house, to supply labor, and that's it. They were designed to represent labor.
Oh, hey. Before the end of the show, we got 5 minutes.
I don't know exactly what they're afraid of.
Well, we got some feedback.
Oh,
Dad, don't stop talking, sir. Or somebody, whoever was talking. John, you were talking.
I don't know I don't know all the fears that everybody has. I know some of them do fear repercussions from or retaliation from their representatives.
Okay, I've been wrongfully suspended and fired 9 times. I've gotten my job back each time. I've gotten paid for it because I went out to the front of the Solidarity House and I either banged on Bob King's car or I went straight up to Dennis Williams' face. And that's what it comes down to. Just like how they show up during ratification vote to your locals and they can't answer your questions and then they start down-talking you, that you guys need to flip that and do that to them. If you guys would unify and you bring the masses out, then that would change the outcome of our path and our direction. But you can't just do it with 10 people. And they can't retaliate against 150,000 auto workers.
No.
Hey, I'm willing. I mean, last year I was with you out there. I couldn't make it this year.
I'm not speaking about you. I'm speaking about the majority of the membership. Not you, not Marty. I know you and Marty, and I know Scott, and I know Don. All of you guys do what you're supposed to do. You guys are taking a stand. You guys are speaking up. I'm talking about the rest of those players out there.
Well, I'm facing – it's difficult. You know, I've got some people who are upset at my plant. But the thing is that I've got – the majority of my members are – not educated, and I'm still trying to work on the basics.
Well, let me say this: if you guys lose your job, you're gonna be out on the street. Do you think Dennis Williams is gonna let you live in his cottage?
No.
That's common sense, right? So common sense says if he's not gonna let you live there because they negotiated your job away, guess what? You need to get your asses out in front of that Solidarity House. And start putting pressure on them.
Right. Right.
You don't need education. You need common sense. That's what you need is common sense. You need to fight outside of the box. You need to be unorthodox. Because you could be educated to the contract. You could be educated to the Constitution and the bylaws. But that hasn't done nothing. You guys can file all the appeals and everything that you want. But you're playing within their rules, so therefore you're going to continue to lose because they control it all.
I agree.
So
it's just
so you don't need the education. You need common sense.
Well, the members need to know, and they can only know through education about their power. They don't realize most of my membership is young, and they have less than 5 years in. Our plant is a young plant. And inexperienced with most members. And they don't know the power that they have. They don't realize that they are the union and they are the real power. And if they come together, and I'm trying to teach them that. And it's painstaking.
My thing is this. If I got an argument with two of the temps, and we got in this argument, right? And all of a sudden, we started pushing and shoving each other, and a fight was to break out. That wouldn't bother me so much, right? But now if there was 15 or 20 TPTs that were coming against me, now I'd have something to worry about. That's what unity does. You bring those numbers together, you build up the masses, and then all of a sudden, guess what? If the other side's smaller, they're going to start fearing you.
Fellas, I think we got to give it back to Scott because it's an hour-long show tonight.
Well,
I just added
30 more minutes. Go ahead, guys. 30 more minutes.
Okay.
8:30. We'll go to 8:30.
All right. Let's have at it. Some more.
So my thing is people just need to understand that we do not move forward unless we unify for the same things that we share in common, which is our wages, our benefits, our way of life, our families. Those are the things that we share in common. So your political differences might be different, but these things we do share in common. So as you know, with the Solidarity House negotiating these sellout contracts, they're outsourcing jobs. They're cutting your benefits. They're cutting your wages. So those are the things that we need to unify and come together and start fighting for together in solidarity as one, because the more the better. Because just like your union meetings, when you guys go to the union meetings, it's always the same people that show up to these union meetings. Your appointed positions, your Kool-Aid drinkers, and your elected positions. And they control the whole local because very few other people show up. So if you start building, if you build up your group and it's bigger than that clique that you have at your local, guess what? Now you have the power because you got more numbers at that local hall than they do. So you got to break up these cliques. But I'm going to tell you, this local leadership, they're doing exactly what the Solidarity House tells them. They get perks. You know, how many times do your elected officials, you don't see them because they're probably off outside the plant, outside the gates, getting paid to be off work. And you guys know that.
We see it a lot at our plant. It's very apparent. People are starting to really wake up to that one.
So they're all getting paid off in some way. They're all getting their special little perks. And you guys are on the losing end. That should be enough to get you guys to unify and to organize out in front of the regions and out in front of the Solidarity House and even out in front of the dealerships. But if you stand out in front of those dealerships, do not block the entrances, do not stand out in the street, and do not destroy anything. It's a peaceful protest to let them know that you are out there and you're sounding off and letting your concerns be heard, and you're letting them know that you're at their doorstep. So when all this shit comes down and it doesn't go, and these companies don't meet us at least halfway, then we're letting them know then we're going to be going through the door the next time. But it don't happen without the membership.
Right. You got to have the membership. That's the strength.
Yep.
You know, so it's like that, and it's a process. Like John said, it's a long process. Shouldn't be that long, but it is a long process because people aren't concerned. Other people are afraid. You know, you get the chunks to come out and do anything because they want to keep their job. So that's the only money they're making. It may not be much. That's all they're making. They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them.
They keep holding that carrot in front of them. Maybe you'll get to be a full-timer. You know, keep putting that carrot out there. They keep chasing
right.
it.
Well, not to mention the fact
right.
that we're also trying to undo 30 years of divisionary tactics and fear tactics that the international and the company has been using against us to divide us. So, you know,
if they start whipsawing each local against each other, that tells you that they don't support the membership. If they start building cabins up on Black Lake using non-union folks, that tells you they don't support union. If they tell the skilled trades their votes don't count, that means they don't support unions. If they start outsourcing jobs and getting rid of pensions and health care and all that other crap, they don't support their own union. They're white-collar workers eating this union from within. You guys, as blue-collar workers, need to stand up to these people at the Solidarity House that's eating this union from within and just gang-raping you and stripping you of all these union dues that we pay into this. They're going to end up collapsing this union.
I can almost agree with that. You're right.
Yeah, I've got a group.
It's that point.
They're starting to get louder about wanting to pull their dues, and I can't stress enough to them that it's better to have a little voice than no voice.
If you guys pull your union dues and collapse this union because they're going to eat through all the assets, there's nothing going to be standing between you and management. Meaning once this union has been dissolved, I guarantee these companies are just going to throw you out on the street. So you're making a stupid mistake by backing out of union dues. That's not the right call.
They'll They'll get rid of all of us, and they'll bring in $10 an hour sons of bitches.
Yep.
You said sons of bitches?
Sons of bitches.
$10 sons of bitches.
And they will, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're doing, look, I mean, look, they're already bringing in temps.
Yeah.
You know? So what makes you think they won't bring people in for $10 an hour if they collapse this union? I mean, the fact is, a lot of these states are right to work, right? They were hoping with all the corruption and the collusion that you know, they were going to pull the union down with the right to work. And it didn't happen. People still continue to pay union dues.
Yeah, well, you're right.
If you collapse this union, then they're going to bring in, like John said, they're going to start bringing in people making $10 an hour.
Yeah, my plant was successful at keeping the TPTs and TFTs at bay, but our current chairman is a sellout, and we got him now for the first time. We got him for the first time this year, they're dogging him. They're treating him terrible. We had one instance I just learned about last week where they needed somebody to go over and cover in another zone on the assembly line. And one of the seniority guys volunteered and said, I'll go do it. And they said, no, send the TFT over.
Mm.
He'd already been over in that zone. He was familiar with it. The TFT, not so much. And, yeah.
And there you go. So they're going to send a TFT over there, but they're going to tell a high seniority person they can't go over there.
Right.
So now they're violating seniority rights.
Yep.
I'm going to tell you guys, when 2019's contract ratification vote comes up, and this leadership sells out any part of our health care, they don't eliminate the tier system or the temp system, and they don't bring back COLA, and they don't stop outsourcing jobs, I can tell you right now, just with those things I just listed, I'm voting no. I hope you guys do the same thing.
Yeah. If they don't have – there's five things I'm looking for, and if I don't see a single – they could have four out of the five, and I don't care. I'm still voting no. And I think Dick Danjen's right. I'm not even going to go to the meeting. And I hope they're standing in an empty room and that we all vote no.
Yeah.
Now, people should go to these meetings. Let me tell you something. You guys remember when Norwood Jewell went to the meetings and he couldn't even answer the questions, right?
Yeah.
And he was down-talking people. My thing is, look, that's union business that happens at these meetings. That's your considered protected activity. Get down there. You guys do what you got to do. And I'm going to leave it at that, but you know where I'm going with that. There's more of you in that room than there are of them. You guys do what you got to do. If they're going to down talk you and disrespect you, then you guys do what you got to do to get them in check.
Well, that's happened before, Brian, and we've seen it happen at Ford. We've seen it happen down there at the Jeep plant. They take off, they end the meeting, they get them guys out of there so that they're safe, and that's it. You're left with empty hands.
Well, you have some people standing outside that building watching every single door. And when they're ready to come out, guess what? You guys will be out there.
I don't believe a word that comes out of their mouth anyway. So why am I going to waste my time? I can read the contract for myself, and if I don't see those items in there, no TPTs, equality for all, health care, the same for all.
How could you believe what comes out of their mouth? They can't even answer your questions. And they're the ones supposedly that negotiated the damn thing.
What's the point in going? I'd rather just see them with their sit staring at an empty room with their junk in their hand, looking at each other like, well, what happened? Well, what happened is you're scumbags and you're not worth our time.
The reason for going is because they came to your local to scare you by showing up and threatening you to vote yes on this contract, and you guys need to flip that back around and threaten them. You need to put fear into them. That way, when they go back the second time, hopefully they'll have enough fear in them to do the right thing. Hold them accountable. That's the only way you're going to hold them accountable is confronting them like they confront us. Anybody can be a keyboard warrior and sit there and talk crap behind a keyboard. If you don't show up to those meetings, how are you going to confront them? How are you going to let your voices be heard?
You just simply vote no.
Right.
Okay. And what's stopping them from passing the damn contract anyways, like they did with Teamsters? Or like how they told the steel trades that their votes don't count, right?
Because we need everyone to vote. If the majority
right.
of the people vote, if 90% of the workers vote, they can't. They cannot
they,
overturn.
Yes, they can do whatever they want. You know why? Because they're going to come back. They're going to come back and say 50% voted yes, and 50% voted no, and 51% voted yes. They're going to swap the ballot boxes out.
Well,
and then
I'm just saying.
Happened.
I'm just saying
that. Right. Right. I mean, back in the day, we used to call those blanket parties. You know, not that we're advocating violence on the show. We're just saying that,
it's my show.
Situations have, we have.
Can
to
I tell you something? Can I tell you something?
Sure.
Union history was founded on violence. There were a lot of union members that bled and died for this union and fought for this union. Okay?
Yes, there was.
Against management. Management was abusing us and violating us, using violence against us. And now our own leadership is doing the same thing. So I'm saying I'm not promoting the violence, but what I'm saying is if they inflict violence on us, then we have no choice but to stand up for ourselves. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It's called self-defense. That's what I'm promoting, self-defense, not violence.
By the way, real quick, I've changed subject, but you talk about, you know, a strike. UPS is telling its customers to start making some alternative shipping plans in case of a strike. It's looking like that's going to happen. So that was just put out 3 days ago. So... some of these guys are standing tough. Well, it's not like, I guess I'm saying, trying to say is pay attention. Here's the Teamsters. They're going to go out on strike, folks. They're going to address their problems, you know, and they're not happy with where the leadership's at. So what you're saying, Scott,
is the membership has finally decided to stand up against the Teamsters leadership and force them to represent them. Is that what you're saying?
It was conveyed to the
So why ain't the UAW membership doing the same thing?
Good question, Brian. That's a good question.
The Teamsters membership is not afraid to stand up to their leadership. Why are we afraid to stand up to our leadership? Company's been making record profits. They've been getting corporate tax breaks. Don't we deserve a piece of the pie?
Absolutely.
With some whipped cream on it?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And maybe a cherry?
Whipped cream. Maybe a cherry. Speaking of whipped cream and a banana. Yeah.
Don't
I don't want the banana nuts. You can keep that off there.
I was going to say something. I think I won't say it. Thank you.
Hey, this last week, I don't know if you guys were paying attention at all.
Since Scott never
Brian has good idea.
I've got something to say. If there's any retirees out there and you're concerned about the new health care plan, it's the next greatest thing in the world. Give us a call and let us know how you feel about it. Then 2 weeks. I'll give you 2 weeks.
Right.
Go ahead, Scott.
Which would be November 18th will be the next show. November 18th.
Unless something happens and then we all get together again.
Right.
Go for it.
Brian. Well,
yes.
Brian, this last week, your buddy down the National Labor Relations Board made a change this last week for a new policy that's been implemented. Workers will find it easier to sue their unions for negligence. It says that unions that don't properly process workers' grievances now will be presumptively considered liable unless they can prove otherwise. A change would cause a major increase in litigation at time when the unions are struggling to remain its members and stabilize finances, right? Okay, that's what the article said. But what they said, though, is that when you get a chance to pursue your union, it says that if the union's failure to keep a worker fully appraised of the efforts to pursue a grievance constitutes more than mere negligence, and it itself would therefore be a violation. So the article says, you know, we're beating up on the unions and stuff, and I'm saying this gives some of the workers a little more leverage against their own union that doesn't want to take care of us.
I don't agree with that, and this is why I don't agree with it, because just Right to Work was supposed to do the same thing, and it didn't, right? As you know,
right.
We filed a class action lawsuit against the UAW and Fiat Chrysler Automotive against the collusion and the corruption, and our case still got thrown out. So, again, here we're trusting into the system or believing in the system that really don't work for the membership. And the representatives at the Solidarity House are smart enough to know to make it look like that you are at fault versus them. I don't see the National Labor Relations Board really taking care of a lot of these cases like they say they're going to.
Right. I mean, I've been down to Detroit. You've been down there a couple of times yourself. You know what it's like when you go in and you make it through, you talk to a lawyer, and you kind of leave there with high hopes, and then you get the letter or the phone call a week or two later, and everything you went in there and talked about just kind of went poof. It's all gone.
And then they tell you, you're going to have to file an appeals with the National Labor Relations Board in Washington, D.C., and you know, you're going through all these hoops, and nothing's getting taken care of.
Yeah, they don't make it easy.
No, they don't.
No. I had, back quite a few years ago, I had the lawyer himself tell me that we had a damn good case, and that was shot down from the regional director who talked to no other than Walter Reuther's grandson. I believe his name was Alan Reuther, who was the lobby arm for the UAW in Washington, D.C. I like that.
Yeah, so the union's got lobbyists, and they influence the National Labor Relations Board. They influence the government. Do you really think any of this is going to fall into labor's side? To me, they're siding up with the corporations, and they're siding up with the Solidarity House leadership. They're not standing up for the workers.
Right. Well, it's sad, but that's what's going on. I don't know, man. It's such a quagmire when you look at. like you said, you create the argument. You put all the facts out there, and people just don't get it. You know, we're here to help you. We're here to help you help yourself. This is all you got to do. Hold these people accountable. And nobody wants to do it. And when is it going to get evident? I don't know. Is it going to get evident, you know, with John's help and Marty's help, mine help, Don's help, your help, Dick's help, whoever, Jim, anybody who puts this stuff out here, and these people don't want to seem to understand or grasp onto this, you know? I mean, look at Scott Holderson. They've been doing the trying to work their membership and get their board changed out for years, and now I don't know where that's at. You know, I'm going to leave that right there. I'm just saying, you know,
but my
when
thing
do people
is, you know,
wake
we,
up?
We got all these groups like Auto Caravan and these other groups out there, and nobody's organizing in front of the Solidarity House putting pressure on them. Nobody's organizing out in front of the National Labor Relations Board. Nobody's organizing out in front of the dealerships or out in front of our region,
right,
putting pressure on the pressure points where it's needed. Because my thing is like I said, you guys keep thinking the system works for you, and it don't. My thing is,
right,
you can have all these educated white-collar workers lead you out of a job or ship your jobs overseas or outsource your jobs or cut your benefits and wages, or you guys can lead your own path by unifying and standing as one and start hitting these pressure points.
For all who don't understand, when you talk about hitting the dealerships, give you a quick piece of history. Can I go back 30 years, over 30 years? There was a place by the name of Numi, California. And I believe that their local was out of, if I say it right, Rancho Cucamonga. There was a fellow by the name of Pete Beltran. What Pete Beltran did was he went to the Latino community and he asked them not to visit any of the local Chevrolet dealerships until they got some language on what was going to happen at their plant. He was a local union president at the time. It took them 3 months. And finally the dealership, Scott with General Motors, said, "You're killing us out here. You got to do something because our sales are dead." That's what happened by going to the dealerships. It does make an impact. But he had the whole community doing it, not just 10 people. And that seems to be the trick, is to get the people in numbers, Brian.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
I'm just saying.
I absolutely agree with you.
It works. But, you know, it was a different time, and he was a good union leader. He worked for the people. He believed in the people. And he believed that by us maintaining where we're at, if you ever hear me talk about community, that's where I learned that from, was for many phone calls with Pete Beltran, talking about community. He says, we don't take pride in our community when we're getting, you know, secondhand crap. He says, if we're not happy as workers, he says, nobody else can be happy around us. And if we're not getting a meaningful wage, then we can't take care of our community. If I take care of the community, it's a mom and pop places where you go shopping. When you have some extra money, you go do some other things. When you're happy in what you're doing with your kids and your family, you're more apt to support the community as far as sports goes, too. It affects your life. And also, like we said, I'm more worried about my kids eating right now than people down at Solidarity House.
Well, the bottom line is,
yeah,
the bottom thing is everything's intertwined, meaning that these companies are making record profits and they're getting corporate tax breaks, and they're cutting our wages and our benefits, and they're outsourcing jobs and laying people off. You can't support your community. You can't support the local infrastructure or the state's infrastructure or the federal infrastructure. Something's got to give. Because if you're giving these companies corporate tax breaks and they're killing off jobs or cutting wages and benefits, who's supporting the infrastructure? Who's supporting the communities?
Right. not a small army of people making $15 an hour or $10 an hour if you're at one of the holding groups. You know, you can barely survive. You know, people listen to the show, think we're complaining. Set your budget to survive off $10 an hour a week, okay? So let's say you did 40 hours a week. That's $400. Try living off $400 a week. I want you to make a payment of some kind, your cell phone, your utilities, your food. Try making a payment. Oh, and don't get sick. Don't have to go to the hospital for an emergency. That's a whole other bill you never thought about. You're going to have to incorporate that into your $400 a week too, aren't you? You see what I'm saying?
People well, $400 a week, $400 a week, there's no way you're going to pay on a mortgage, a car note, car insurance, house insurance, property taxes, all your utilities, food. There's just no way you could do it on $400 a week.
Could you do that on $500 a week?
Scott, chill out.
Yeah.
Quit putting numbers up.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I couldn't. Okay. Relax. I already got my calculator out three times. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Right.
But no, most people, even $500 a week after taxes, you're still not doing it.
No.
I mean, the bottom line is, hell, it takes both spouses to go out there just to make ends meet. You got some of these temps working two jobs. And they still can't do it.
Yes, they do.
Well, you know, it's
crazy.
Disgusting, though, that they go after medical, especially in these manufacturing, repetitive manufacturing jobs that, you know, these jobs injure people. Over time.
They kill them, too.
Yeah, it kills us and or cripples us. A lot of people wind up crippled when they retire, by the time that they retire. There's something wrong that they don't have full use of their hands, wrists, knees, hips, their backs. God, the high-load drivers are twisting and turning constantly.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, we do very strenuous, tough jobs. We have to have good medical coverage just because of the nature of our jobs.
829.
Thank you. I didn't even dial for the time.
Right. Well, gentlemen, we'll be back in 2 weeks on the 18th.
Sorry. When you start talking, I get a buildup. Go ahead.
Well,
I'm glad the show's back.
And guys, I won't be able to join you, but...
Hold on,
I should be able to join you after that.
Okay.
Okay.
You join
well,
us whenever you feel like. That'd be great. That'd be great.
Well, I love talking to you guys. It's always a good time. I like what we talk about, and hopefully we're reaching people, and
well, we're reaching them.
Hopefully
they're listening.
I don't want to reach them. I want them to get engaged.
Well, that's
right.
What I mean. Hopefully
we're
reaching them and that they're thinking about it, and hopefully they're going to step up and help us and get engaged and put these guys in check. Actually get rid of them. I want to see these some bitches out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Right.
Damn right.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. I'll order in prison. How's that?
Oh, yeah. I'd be good with that.
Yeah, there you go.
You must have said a funny. I didn't
right.
catch it. All right. On behalf of John, Marty, and Brian, and Scott, I'm Paul, and we'll see you in 2 weeks on the whatever date that is, 18th. We'll all be back 18th. And having fun on the 18th. Okay, good night, everybody.
Hey,
Don. Oh, Lord God.
Hey,
sakes,
real
what,
quick.
God, I just listened to you.
Day.
Shut up.
Happy Veterans Day. And thank you